This is Morning Edition on Vermont Public Radio. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Good morning.
On this final day of 2015, we're taking a look back at some of the year's most significant news stories, some of which will no doubt influence events in 2016. And joining us to talk about these stories is VPR's news director, John Dillon. Hi, John.
Hello, Mitch.
So let's start with politics. How much of a surprise was it that Governor Peter Shumlin said he wouldn't be seeking a fourth term as governor of Vermont?
It was surprising at the time, but not really in retrospect. Remember that right before the legislative session, he withdrew his signature policy issue, single-payer health care. And throughout this latest term, he's been plagued by the inability of Vermont Health Connect to work as designed. This is the online health insurance marketplace that really just has been a fail. There's no other way to say it. Policies had to be adjusted manually. Changes had to be made with paper, not IT technology. It was really a black mark on his ability to manage a high-tech system, and that influenced the public's perception of whether he could pull off single payer. And then you had the issue of the cost of single payer and the burden to taxpayers that represented. So with that sort of unable to happen for the governor, in retrospect, it wasn't surprising that he said he wasn't going to run again.
Perhaps anticipating some of that criticism, here's what he had to say when he made the announcement he would not be running.
I believe that we will have accomplished, and in many ways, in many cases, exceeded my expectations, the work we set out to do when I became governor. I am announcing today, for those reasons, that I will not be a candidate for a fourth term in 2016.
It's kind of a stunning turnaround from a moment, I think, John, that maybe have been more of a high point in Governor Shumlin's tenure after Tropical Storm Irene in 2011, when he was seen as largely handling the after events of that storm really well.
Exactly. And then you had the events of Vermont Health Connect, which the governor initially labeled as a nothing burger, the warnings about the technological pitfalls that lay ahead. And I think those words he came to regret, because that really has defined, fairly or unfairly, his management abilities. The people in his fifth floor office really take umbrage at that description. But I think it's true that that's how the public has perceived and judged the healthcare issues accomplished by his administration or not accomplished by his administration.
Well, that announcement by the governor really opened the floodgates for a number of candidates seeking the state's highest office to publicize their intentions to run. And one of those was House Speaker Shep Smith. But not long into his campaign, he made a shocking announcement of his own, saying that he would be suspending his bid after learning that his wife, Melissa, was diagnosed with breast cancer.
As so many Vermonters know, a diagnosis like this reshapes one's priorities. This is a time when Melissa and the kids need me most.
So that was the announcement by Shep Smith that he would be withdrawing from the race. What does that withdrawal from the race leave on the field on the Democratic side, John?
Well, you have former Transportation Secretary Sue Minter and former Windsor County Senator Matt Dunn and current Google executive vying for the Democratic nomination. Shep was really a leading contender in this race. He obviously did what he had to do and withdrew to take care of his family. He had told reporters prior to this announcement that his wife was diagnosed with breast cancer, but that they had hoped that they could beat the disease and he could continue his campaign. But I guess the treatments didn't turn out quite as well as expected. She's doing fine, but he really did need to spend more time with his family. And in this case, that expression really did ring true. This is a decision that many people can relate to.
Yeah, and he talked, too, about trying to simplify health care in Vermont. He wants to expand Dr. Dinosaur because of the confusion that he and his wife found when they looked into the health insurance issues.
It's really interesting the way Shep Smith has kind of been liberated because he's not a candidate and he is motivated by a personal experience that so many people have gone through to really try and accomplish something in terms of healthcare reform and making it simpler for people to navigate this system.
Now, do you think that Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott on the Republican side is even more of a contender? He was already a pretty big name now that Shep Smith is out of the race.
He's definitely got the highest name recognition, and he has a well-financed campaign. He spent $16,000 setting up and live streaming on the internet his announcement. That was a signal to the rest of the field. He sort of threw down the money gauntlet and said, hey, look what I can do just kicking off, and be prepared for a very vigorous campaign.
And also on the GOP side, there is former Wall Street executive Bruce Lissman challenging Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott for the Republican nomination.
That's right.
Of course, another Vermont politician you may have heard of made some big news in 2015 with intentions of seeking the highest office in the land. Here's Vermont's independent Senator Bernie Sanders announcing his bid for the White House, seeking the Democratic nomination.
Today, with your support and the support of millions of people throughout our country, we begin a political revolution to transform our country economically, politically, socially, and environmentally.
Well, John, when that announcement was first made, I think it's fair to say that Sanders' bid was really seen as a long shot. And now, as we get ready for the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary early next year, has that perception changed?
Absolutely. If you had asked me, we were there on the waterfront when Sanders made that announcement in May, that he would be leading in New Hampshire within striking distance of Hillary Clinton in the Iowa caucuses, I would have thought you were joking. I mean, we thought Sanders was in this to make a point, to maybe move Hillary Clinton to the left, more in line with his positions. But what happened was that his campaign tapped into a national mood. It's almost like what he has been saying for 30 years, finally the public is starting to agree with the issues of income inequality, the perception that the odds are stacked against the working person, the power of big corporations, the power of big money in campaigns. These are issues that Bernie Sanders has been talking about since the 70s. But now that the wealth gap has grown, it has truly resonated with the public. And you couple that with the field campaign that he organized, which has built itself on small donations and extensive volunteer operations in these early states. You have to say that it was a total surprise, at least for me. I mean, his advisors always told me Bernie Sanders is in this to win. And I guess I didn't really quite understand how that could happen, and I'm still not seeing a clear path after New Hampshire, but he's looking good heading into the early caucus state of Iowa and then New Hampshire just a week later.
There was unfortunately an horrific crime story that came about in 2015. Remind us again about the case of Jody Herring and Lara Sobel of the Department for Children and Families.
Lara Sobel was a DCF social worker. She was leaving work one Friday afternoon in August and allegedly was shot and killed by a woman whose child was removed from her custody. It was a horrible, horrible incident. It shocked the state. Within sight of many people at her workplace, the state really grieved after this happened. And three members of the alleged murderer, Jody Herring, three members of her family were found dead the next day, allegedly shot by the same weapon.
VPR's Peter Hirschfeld was covering the story when Jody Herring first appeared in court.
The shiny metal shackles on Jody Herring's ankles clanged loudly as sheriff's deputies escorted her from a courthouse holding cell to her seat at the defendant's table. She wore a red prison jumpsuit and flip-flops, and her stone-faced demeanor was a far cry from the wild-eyed mugshot that police took shortly after she allegedly murdered a DCF caseworker outside a state office complex in Barrie Friday evening.
John, I imagine this has led to some changes regarding the Department for Children and Families, at least more security, safety concerns, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. The changes were even underway before that in terms of adding more caseworkers. The state has placed greater emphasis on getting people out in the field and working with families, in particular because of the disruption and issues caused by the state's problems with opioids. It's placed greater strain on family services. But then this happened. Caseworker safety became an issue. The office of DCF is actually moving from that Barrie location to one that can be secured more easily. Other people have been arrested for threatening social workers. It really is a frontline position that people probably didn't think of as being so dangerous. And now, you know, sometimes they go out on calls with police backup or at least not alone.
Now, on the economic front, there was some mostly good news regarding at least one big employer in Vermont. Tell us what happened in 2015 with IBM, a bit of a strange situation.
IBM was transferred, you have to say, to Global Foundries, a company that has Middle East ownership. And you have to say it was transferred because they actually had to pay to get rid of its chip division. They paid Global Foundries $1.5 billion to take the Vermont plant and other plants off its hands. The good news is that Global Foundries really is setting itself up to be the chip manufacturer of these essential components for all of the handheld devices that are sold nowadays. So they're going to put more money into IBM or the IBM plant and maybe even hire some people. It was quite a transition story, though, because we had heard that the IBM was going to be shut down, that all these jobs are going to be lost. And then Global Foundries came in to save the day, but IBM actually had to pay them to do that.
To save the day, yeah.
Yes.
John, finally, the state's new Clean Water Act is going to loom big in 2016. What does this mean? What's the big impact for small farmers in Vermont?
The big impact for farmers and other polluters, which include municipalities that border the lake and pump their sewage into it, their treated sewage, is that they'll have to spend more money to reduce their phosphorus inputs into the lake and its tributaries. And this followed years and years of the legislature and the Environmental Protection Agency and the State Agency of Natural Resources focusing on the lake. But it wasn't until last summer, the summer prior to this legislative session, that the issue of algae blooms just became so huge. The legislative session started with people testifying in really graphic and emotional detail about the impact of these noxious blooms on their vacation properties, their livelihoods. And I think that just truly struck a chord with lawmakers. And they said, okay, now it's time to do something. So they passed this comprehensive clean water bill, which includes money for the first time to help polluters clean up their act.
And John, what's going to be big on the legislative agenda in just a couple of weeks heading into January?
A tight budget, and in particular this year, very tight because of overruns in the state's Medicaid program. A lot more people became eligible for Medicaid. It strained the budget. It's something like $40, $60 million over budget now. And then secondly, we're going to have a vigorous debate over marijuana legalization. There's quite a momentum moving in the state with some very prominent business people and lobbyists behind it. There's a counter argument we've heard recently from business leaders and others who saying, hey, you know, let's let this play out in the states that have legalized it so far for a few more years before Vermont goes down that path.
VPR's news director John Dillon, thanks so much and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Mitch. Same.